Know that when I share personal things, I'm never saying, I've got my act together, please do it the way that I'm, you can do it the way I do it and you'll be successful. I've had a horrendous week just trying to get to that booth, and I can't tell you how many mistakes that I've made and how much failure I felt in the last week. If I cry a little bit, though, it's not sadness. It's I get overcome completely of what God's done in my life, and I really want to be able to share. That's all I can share with you is encouragement from the Word and from my own life, because that's really all I have. I haven't researched this topic. God's been writing this workshop in my life for 15 years, and that's really all I can share with you. I'm a little hoarse because the vendor workshop at 11 o'clock was in kind of a curtained area where I had to shout for people to hear me, so pardon me. I realize that some of you are just trying to figure out some practical stuff and making this single parent or this doing it alone stuff work. And for others of you, there are fresh wounds and you're feeling like you might not make it. And I understand that feeling. I want to just try to encourage you with one overriding principle, overriding theme that has become a theme of my life that I feel like God wants me to know more than anything, and then a little bit of my personal story, and then the principles that I think have helped me through the years to know God in the midst of the struggles of being a single parent. And the overriding principle is that if God calls you to something, he will give you everything that you need to do it. And if he's given you children, and I suspect he has if you're here at a homeschool convention, then he's given you a high calling. He is concerned about much bigger things than where your kids attend school, and even whether you get the laundry done on time. This is, listen to Psalm 78, 5-8. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should teach them to their children, that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and tell them to their children, that they should put their confidence in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that did not prepare its heart, and whose spirit was not faithful to God. Keeping that big picture in mind helps with the little details that come unglued sometimes. We are training up a generation to know their God and to go out and do mighty things. And our calling to pass on the rich heritage that God has given us to the next generation and then to the world, it's huge. We want them to be able to go into the next generation like Noah and Esther and Daniel, no matter how evil things become. It's just, that is a big thing. And I'm sure some of you realize that. And I think that we get discouraged sometimes because we forget what is at stake. We long for the comforts of the world, the comforts of maybe people that have it a little easier than we do. Because we forget what's at stake. We forget the battle that's being fought in the unseen world for our children. We don't know what it's going to be like to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. If we can live for that day, it makes the big things bigger. It makes God bigger, and it makes the little things, as difficult as they can be sometimes, it makes them just a little bit easier, a little bit smaller. A little bit of my story is my husband and I had been homeschooling since 1985. He was a very devoted husband, the best father I've ever met. He was a leader in our home, a leader in the church, a leader in the Christian community. And then when I had three little ones under three and four school-age children, we took a trip to Korea that ended up just more stressful than our family had planned on. And the children and I came back after 6 weeks. And you can imagine that was difficult, traveling to Korea with seven children and 28 pieces of luggage. It was difficult. And then when my husband returned, we returned earlier. When he returned, he announced that he could not trust the scriptures anymore. But that was all it was from the beginning until he left the faith completely. And then for 2.5 years, he stayed with us, but he left our home after that time. Those were difficult days. But even though those, even through those early days when I was home and he was still in Korea, God gave me a focus and an intensity that I can only attribute to him. It was as if he said out loud, if you do only, the only thing you can accomplish is to raise your kids to know me, that's enough. And so I learned a measure of contentment in those days when I was sometimes not getting the dishes done till 10, and I would not even wake the kids up in the morning. I just let them get up when they could get up, because that was all I could, that was all I could manage. God was there, and he was writing my story. I want to go over four principles. We'll do a few practical things too, just how do you make this work anyway in the day-to-day struggles. But first, four principles that, looking back, I think really helped me to get through it. Principles that God impressed on me and showed me sometimes through the tough part. He showed me these principles. Number one is to see God's hand in my situation. And to see God's hand in your situation. And although the reasons for your aloneness or feeling that way may differ greatly, there may be reasons to blame somebody else, to blame your situation. Ultimately, these are all part of God's call on our lives. And Job is perhaps our best example of that. When he had had all his wealth and all his family taken away, though he could have at least blamed Satan, we don't hear of him even blaming Satan. He said, "The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away." And he worshiped. And when even his health was attacked, what was his response? Shall we accept good from God and not adversity also? He knew that even his losses were part of the call of God on his life. And God will not call you to anything that he will also not provide the way to accomplish it. And my God shall supply all your needs according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. Philippians 4:9. And I try to list examples from my life at each stage. And I haven't done this workshop for a while. And I went back over my old notes and I thought, but God's done new things in my life since then. What shall I share? I can't share all of it. But perhaps the biggest thing is my fear when my husband left the faith was that my kids would not be able to believe anymore. That he was the one that had led them to the Lord. He had been our spiritual guide. How will they be able to trust in the midst of him leaving the faith? And God, I prayed for them and I cried for them. And God answered that prayer by giving me something very hard to do. In those years when he lived at home, but we had nothing in common anymore, were very, very difficult to have lost really everything we had in common. But God used those very years to answer my prayer for my kids. So they watched. We just continued to trust the Lord. And he became kind of foolish. And the Lord showed the difference to my children and caused them to hold fast to their faith. And so even those of them that weren't as mature as he was or as smart as he was were able to hold their faith and able to contend with him. And I don't know what life would have been like if this wasn't our situation, but I know that God used that to hold my kids' faith, and I am very grateful to him for that. The second principle that I see as overriding is to set priorities. This is really important for everyone. That's just the way believers should live, but it's especially important when you have what feels like probably two or three jobs to do at the same time. It's really important to keep those priorities in front of your face. In order to stay focused on the call of God, you must set priorities. In other words, you may have many goals. I do. I would love to do a lot more outdoor activity. I like to do crafts. I like to read for pleasure. And I'd love to travel a little bit more, even with my kids. That would be fine. But most of what I'd like to accomplish, I don't get to. And God has given me a real clear sense that my highest goal is to train my children. So if something gets in the way of that goal, I need to say no. We cannot afford to let this part go. We can't afford to lose our kids. Some of those other things can wait for another day, but we can't afford to not train them, to not show them the way to the cross. We all make decisions in our daily routines. It's easy to say in the midst of a conference or in the midst of our time with the Lord, you are my first priority, training my kids is my second priority, but then we have little decisions to make every day, and that's where this becomes difficult. And I think one of the things God taught me was back in high school, and one of the things that I've used as an example since, I worked at Friendly's through high school and college, and there were always many things to do, dishes and people at the cash register and waiting on people and fixing the food, but they taught us to have a priority list. Cash always comes first. Dishes are always at the bottom, and they told us what was in between. So all through our work shift, we had to be reorganizing our priorities. Oh, somebody's waiting needs to be greeted. That rises to the top of the priority list. And I've only realized recently that that really has helped me to be able to do that in life, to be able to figure out what my big priorities are and then to organize around those priorities. Oh, this ladies' party, Tupperware party might be fun to go to, but does it fit in with my higher priorities? No, I really can't do that. And the Lord has provided those things. He provides me the recreation that I need and the rest that I need. I know that, but it doesn't always feel like that. Kind of a funny story along the same lines. I probably shouldn't bother with another story to make the same point, but it's kind of a funny one. I read a story of a woman who had quintuplets, and I always wanted a big family, so I thought this was really fun to see how she's managing five little babies at the same time. And she just loved being a mom, so it was very inspiring. But one morning when they were toddlers, she was getting ready to go to the pediatrician, and she came down, and one of the babies had dumped the vegetable oil on the kitchen floor, and they were all sliding around in it. And the thing that impressed me was she just took a deep breath and figured out, now, what is my top priority? How do you decide your priorities right then? But you need to quickly put them in order. And so she called the pediatrician first, and then she started one by one get the babies out of the oil. But it helped me to just see this perspective. We're always having to reorder our priorities, and we need the principles to keep us able to do that. Okay. And so, at this point in my life, I read very little just for fun, a couple paragraphs, and I go to sleep. I feel like I'm drowning in clutter and paperwork most of the time. And there are lots of excellent activities that I just don't have time for. But I strive to keep those priorities in order, to train my children, and to make that determine the other things that I do. So I used a unit study method of teaching because I wanted to be able to keep my family together. And I didn't have a lot of time to spend with the kids after we were finished with school. If I'm going to do outside activities, I try to make them have a higher purpose, like leading my kids into some sort of ministry or something like that. That, to me, fits in with my purpose. Teach them hospitality. We do a little pro-life work. We're involved in our church because I feel like that's really important for me to teach my children church commitment. Sometimes I feel like I don't have time to look outside my family. But if I'm going to have kids that make a difference in the world, I need to do that. So I just have to keep thinking about it. I guess that is the bottom line. Okay, let's move on to another principle. The first one was see God's hand in your situation. The second one was set priorities. The third one, stay focused by avoiding situations that tempt you to lose focus and make a plan to be with people and do the things that aid in your encouragement. You really need it. And this varies for everybody. For me, it used to be the mall. Early on, we had a lot of financial problems, and I felt so alone. I would walk through the mall and just imagine all these people had money to do whatever they wanted, and by the end of the hall, I was totally discouraged and feeling sorry for myself. And I realized there was no reason for that, but to keep my priorities right, I just stayed away from the mall. For some, especially single moms, I know church gatherings have been difficult. And in many ways, I think we as Christians can be insensitive to people by excluding them or not paying attention to the special needs. I am grateful for my church. They've always really been there for me. And it's a tough one because you need to be a part of a church, even if it's not really, if it's a hard place for you, this is part of God's call. Maybe Mass Hope. It could easily look like all these people have their act together. They're just pulling together curriculum for next year. But that's not true. You know, there are a lot of people struggling here. And I choose not to attend certain places. Candle parties and book parties and dishes and things like that, I just don't have time for that. And I can't afford to spend an evening that way. We made a decision years ago not to have big birthdays for our kids, period, because I realized I wasn't going to look forward to each additional year if I had to put on a big party. So we have a simple party with just the family that I feel like I can manage. And then if they want to have a party anytime, they can have it. And they can do the work, and they can plan the theme, and nobody has to bring presents. And it works for us. And I have been able to hold on to my sanity. I have 7 kids, and 7 birthday parties a year was going to be too much for me to handle. The other thing that I try to do, and I know some of you, depending on your situation, may not be able to do this at this stage of life, but I try to focus on the blessings even in my singleness. Although the companionship and sharing that goes with marriage are a wonderful gift of God, I have learned to cherish the walk that I have with Him that really is deeper in some ways than it was when I was married. And a married woman has to be concerned about her husband's needs, and that's something that I don't need to do right now at this stage of my life. And I choose, rather than focusing on the empty place at the table, to focus on maybe some trivial things, but things like I don't have to think about everybody's schedules. We can have dinner late, and I just have to answer to the kids and things like that. So I just choose to focus on the advantages of even my singleness. There was a single woman who came to our church years ago now, and she had never been married, but she really needed a place to hang out. And most of the married family, she just couldn't go and hang out there. They were busy, and their husbands came home from work and didn't want her just hanging out there. And she was able to hang out at our house. And we were ministering to her, I think, but she also ministered to my children in many ways. I remember discussions she had with the older ones, especially, how will we trust a man? Our father walked out on us when we were very vulnerable. How will we ever trust a man? And she really had a lot of input into their lives. Some illustrations that have meant a lot to me, and really I've thought about them over and over again, to help you think about this idea of focus, what it means. It doesn't mean just turning down all the bad things. Sometimes it means walking away from good things, best things, and for the things that you know are God's call on your life. Do you remember when Pilgrim from Pilgrim's Progress had set on the path to the gate that would lead him to eternal life, and his family tried to dissuade him? They had all kinds of excuses and reasons why he shouldn't do that. And he finally had to put his fingers in his ears and just run. And I've thought of that illustration many times when I felt like I can't follow the advice of others right now. I can't look to the way that other people are doing things. I have to just hear from God and not be discouraged from what He's called me to do. 2 Timothy 2:3 compares the Christian life with a soldier who cannot get entangled in the affairs of civilian life. And although there are many legitimate pleasures in life, even for a soldier, he's got his commanding officer in mind, and he needs to sometimes, it doesn't mean that we don't have any pleasure, but it means sometimes we have to forsake even legitimate pleasures for something higher, that of training our kids to know God. These things are true of married people too, but they just, I think it's particularly true of single people, or I'm just more aware of it because life has been very difficult at times. A friend of ours raised guide dogs for the blind, and she still thinks I was kind of silly about this, but I like to romp with that dog, and you know, guide dogs are not allowed to romp. He was just at the puppy stage, but he still was very focused, that dog, and he could only play a little bit when he had permission from his master. And so I think it was one time when I was saying, you want to romp, to her guide dog, and I knew that he wouldn't be allowed to, when it struck me that this dog can't play like other puppies, not because puppies playing, there's anything wrong with puppies playing, but because this dog has a higher calling, and he has to be focused on what God's called him to do. And that's true of everyone, but I think particularly when you've got kids to raise and you're trying to do it alone, you not to be focused on that, and to be like the guide dog, and be like Pilgrim. Number four. Learn to depend on God for as much as possible that you would depend on someone else for, on a mate. I am always blessed. I don't always think to do this. I usually try to figure things out for myself or try to complain and fuss and make people in my life feel sorry for me so they make things easier. I don't usually remember to do this first, but when I go to God for advice, pleading my case, trusting him that James 1 gives very firm promise to give wisdom when we ask it, I have been blessed abundantly. I have a whole list of examples. I'm going to have to decide which ones to choose. There was a few years ago that they announced in church that there was a father-son hike coming up. And I really don't have a lot of moments of emotion. I've been doing this singly for almost 15 years now, but I thought, and I prayed, Lord, if my kids aren't included in this, I'm not going to be able to handle it. That's all I could say to them. And I knew that I could not go to other men and ask them to take my boys. They would have, but I couldn't do it. I had to know that somebody cared enough to take them. And I didn't know how I'd handle it. And so I just prayed. And the second time it was announced, I cried again, and I prayed, and I thought, and I told the Lord the same thing. I can't handle this if somebody doesn't include my boys in this father-son hike. And several dads included them, and that's kind of the history of our church. But I just had to go to the Lord because I couldn't go to care of them. Not that it always turns out exactly like that. The other time that I felt God especially ministering to my heart was when my child support was cut in half, and I had been just barely struggling, and I knew it was cut in half, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what God was calling me to. I was a committed homeschooler, and I said, am I going to have to work now? And I just wanted to hear from the Lord. And I remember Friday night when my kids were with their dad, and I had worship music on, and I just was spending time with the Lord trying to hear from him. By the end, I was just feeling completely undone. I didn't know what to do. I was on the floor praying and crying. And by the way, that feeling of inability to do anything and inability to function anymore. When we cry out to God in that, we feel like failures, but he is worshiped when we do that. That's what he wants to hear. He wants to hear us say, I really can't do this. But this evening, the Lord has often, I have not heard his voice, his audible voice, but he has spoken to my heart very directly, much more so since I've been single than he ever did before. And I felt his word to me was, use that little bit of savings that you have, homeschool your kids. Your being with them is more important than that money. And then when it's gone, we'll have this conversation again. And so I watched him stretch that little bit of money I had into probably 3 or 4 years when I didn't have to think about it. I mean, I had to think about it. I had to live simply. But I didn't worry about it. And he stretched that to the point that I knew I was going to run out of money. And we had that conversation again. And I had the idea to start some classes. Oh, well, I'll advertise classes. I've taught lots of classes. I'll see if anybody would pay for this. And the Lord gave me just enough students to pay the bills. I was busy. I lose sleep being busy sometimes, but God has provided. And that was 6 years ago, and that company has, that's what good company is. It was announced earlier. And it's just gotten a little bigger, and it still just supplies for me, but it supplies for many other people at the same time. And so God has done even more than I asked and given me a ministry among homeschoolers, encouraging moms, teaching their kids, and that sort of thing. So I have seen God answer that prayer. Little things, too. Times that I said, I don't know what to do with this kid. And when I take it to the Lord, sometimes it's as if he says, do this. And all of a sudden, there's an idea there, and I know it has come from him. One more. Let me tell you one more. When my older kids all went to college the same year, one had stayed home, the other had gone to a two-year school, so they were all going to other states for school over a 10-day period. And so that's kind of an emotional time anyway. Three of your kids are leaving, and I have to do it alone. And that does tend to get me feeling alone when I have to travel like that. So I prayed, and I did not have a good time doing that. And I had some moments of great emotion and even some anger over my situation. And the sun would go down, and I'd start to feel so alone and so vulnerable. Well, then it came time for my fourth to go to school, and I thought to pray about it a little bit more, I guess. And I had to drive to Ohio. I'm from around here, and I had to drive to Ohio with him. And I thought, you know, there was nobody who could go with me. And I thought, I don't want to go through that again. I'm setting myself up for all that pain and anger and tears. And I registered at a hotel, and then I called this bed and breakfast instead. And I just started telling this Lord, I didn't plan to do this, but I just told her my story. I said, I'm coming out with my son. I know it's going to be really hard for me because I'm all alone. And, you know, do you have a bed for me or something? And so she not only gave me the same price I was going to get at the cheap hotel, but when I got there, she and her husband were waiting, and I would chat with them. After I dropped my husband off, I'd chat with them in the evening, and then I'd go up, and they'd greet me for breakfast, and I just felt so cared for. And it wasn't the same kind of situation. So God provides in very unexpected ways, and he still left me alone there in order to feel his presence and to have to depend on him. Your story of provision will be completely different than mine. Some single moms have a provision of an inheritance or insurance money. I know that. Some have to work a lot more hours than I have to work. Dad, same thing. It's everybody's situation is a little bit different. He's given me an in-law situation with my mother just through the door from me, and she provides for us in many ways, just helping out, just being a support. And Everybody's provision is different. But again, we come back to that theme that he will provide for everything that he calls us to do. If he's provided for us to raise our children, then he will provide what we need to do that. Let me do some practical ideas that have helped me navigate these years, and then I'll save the conclusion. Let me get it. Practical ideas. Discipleship is more than teaching your children all the doctrine and duty of Christianity, although that certainly is part of it. It is walking the walk of faith before your kids, being with them enough to let them see it, and always talking with them about that faith and the God that you live for. I have often had to say to my kids, I don't have the answers, but our God does. We just have to go to him. And when they struggle with fear or anger or resentment, they need to know that I struggle too, and that I find my God to be my all-sufficient answer. So just being, that is part of discipleship. You don't have to be a perfect parent who can fill in all the gaps for your kids. They're going to need God for something in their life too, and it's good to be to take them to his throne, to help them to be the ones who hear from him directly. Secondly, this is something we have really tried to do, and it's been good. We talk often of the blessings that we have as a family. Romans 8:28 says, "For God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God." And I don't let my kids fall into self-pity. God has provided us with so much materially, more than most of the world has. And they have some advantages. They've been at great disadvantage in not having a father in the home. But they have many advantages also. He has provided for them. And we talk about those things often. And my kids have, from college, they have told me that they are so glad that they've not had everything handed to them. I have my fourth one in college. They've all gone to private college, and I haven't been able to help them. I help them fill out paperwork to try to get some scholarships, but really, I haven't been able to help them, but God has provided. And they don't take that for granted. They've had to work very hard to put themselves through, and they said it's helped us appreciate it so much more. We have developed a work ethic, and they've been glad for that. There is always someone worse off than they are. Next, try to understand your children's loss and be a comfort to them, but like I said, don't let them wallow in self-pity, and also try not to make up for that in unhealthy ways, like overindulging them, overspending, trying to give them what other people have in other areas. You can't make up for that loss in some ways that they have, and so to do it in unhealthy ways makes them almost suffer that loss twice. They need you to be a firm parent. They need you to be there to say no sometimes and to help them recognize that you cannot make up for that loss. You can love them. You can help them. And if you've been deserted, try to avoid bad-mouthing the other parent or others that are making you feel put down or that are letting you down. It's not honoring to God, but it also just doesn't work very well. Next, be realistic about what you can accomplish. Take time to pray before you say yes to things. When we returned from Korea, my husband was still in Korea, and we had three babies, three under three. And my kids were ready to get back into sports and things like that they had put on hold. And I said, "Well, you can do those things. I can drive you, but I can't really be there to watch you very much. And when you're the one at home, because I'm driving somebody else, you have to pick up the slack." And they learned to put dinner on, to do what needed to be done at home. That was not a bad thing for them. If you can't be there at every game they play, they know the difference. They know that you're not there because you can't be and not because you don't care about them. It's not going to damage them. Just be realistic about what you can do and what you can't do. I mentioned before that I had had to give up on the idea of getting up and having breakfast together. We would have the schoolwork that we did together started somewhere around 10 or 10:30 or 11. If they were up earlier, they did some of their other work, and they were often up late, later than I wanted them to be. And I mean, we're still in that mode. I won't pretend that I can keep up with life at this point. But we're still functioning. We're family, and I do have some regrets, and I really would like to get my home more in order. One of the questions that I've asked myself from time to time to keep those priorities straight is, if I had 30 days to live, how would I spend my days? And when I came to the spot, when I came to the point where I realized I would have to spend it cleaning out cabinets and cleaning up because it would be so embarrassing to die now and have people find this mess, then I thought, okay, I need to find a time to make this a priority. And in the summer, I do try to do it a little bit, but I never do a quarter of what I'd like to be able to accomplish. Okay, how about some practical? These are some practical things that have helped me with time and money management. Keep lists. I always keep things that I just would like to do on that list. I just keep them a little bit lower than the things that I really need to do. But keeping lists really helps me. even if I don't get through most of it, at least I know where I'm headed. And it also gives me the chance once a day or once a week or however often I sit and redo the list. And I'll redo the list just because I feel like it, not because I've gotten things done. It helps me think through again, why do these things need to move to the top of the list? Because those are now the priority. I'd encourage you to set aside the Lord's Day. It's not as a legalistic formula, but he set it aside for rest and worship, and you need that. You need a time when you don't have to think, what should I be doing right now? I should be, cleaning that. I don't even think that way on Sunday. I don't need to do that. I need to rest and worship. Next, give your kids plenty of chores, the kind that really will help you. If they need a little training, get them the training. If they say, "Oh, this is too much," say, "No, no, it isn't. This is my goal for you. You'll learn to work well." Give them the kind of chores that really help you. I don't think there's anything wrong with allowances, but don't feel like you have to do that. It's just part of living as a family that they need to work. Take the time to train them to do everything they're capable of. You really have enough to do if you're trying to do this alone. Teaching them, managing the house, you have enough to do. I find that it really helps me to work together with my kids. It's together time, but they're also more motivated. They put on some kind of bouncy music and we clean together. It used to be that the week after school got out would be spring cleaning week and we'd work all week. Now it's all summer we're working on it, and it's never done, but we try to work together. And we don't just clean either. We try to have time for friends and time for fun, too. Consider joining a co-op. The co-op is supposed to serve everybody. Just make sure it's really worth it, that what's going to be asked of you in being part of the co-op isn't going to be more than what you're going to get out of it. A co-op should help everybody, not make life more difficult. Consider trading service. If finances are an issue, consider trading service. I used to trade babysitting with other big families. They were the only ones who wanted all my kids, were other big families who were used to it. I traded yard work for my brother-in-law in order for him to orchestrate putting walls in my basement and finishing that off. That is very helpful. Very trivial idea. Don't waste time with things like shopping for just the right birthday gift. Have some things in. Combine your shopping trips. Make sure you're thinking ahead enough. I know you feel like you maybe can't even think ahead, but think ahead enough to get some things in or to combine your shopping trips so you're not having to run out for all these things. It's difficult to have time like that. Don't do jobs that aren't necessary. You might be able to think of a lot of these. Oh, I just Windexing the windows. Really, I need to do that much more often. That's not one of those things that just popped into my mind. But dishes will dry themselves. We never dry dishes. We never do any jobs that will just do themselves. Another example is when we take the sheets off, we wash them, dry them, put them back on, because that saves us having to fold them and put them in the drawer. And sometimes the drawer isn't neat enough to put them in there well anyway. You probably, if you're like me, you don't have time to be cooking between 4 and 6 every afternoon. I never found the once-a-month cooking to work really efficiently for me, so I've done other things. I make a big amount whenever I can, freeze some of it, or even save it for later in the week. And my kids just have to get over that. Oh, we just had this, Mom. Yep, and wasn't it good? And I'll tell them, oh, I planned it. We're having leftovers. And they groan a little. I say, but I planned it this way. I made enough so that we could do this and I don't have to cook. But other things that I do, I'll freeze. If one day a week you can freeze, make a big pot of something and freeze four. If you only were able to do that one day a week and you rotated, that would be 4 days you could pull something out of the freezer. I don't do it quite that methodically, but I do try to make a big amount. It doesn't take that much longer to make something big. And then if we have something two or three times in a week, I don't have it for a while, but at least it has helped me that week. Have a few ingredients in for standby meals when you're really in trouble, so you're not saying, okay, we'll go out to eat when you don't really want to or can't really afford it. So dry peas for spicy pea soup. That's a joke at my house now because I made the big mistake of telling my kids how cheap pea soup was. So now that when we have pea soup, they say, oh, this is the cheapest food there is. And we usually have frozen burritos in just in case we're really stressed and we need to have something like that. You will not achieve perfection. I love the idea of having breakfast together and all sitting down for a hot bowl of soup at lunchtime and having a chat while we're there, but it just doesn't happen. I'm up late getting work done. My kids are often kind of off schedule for one reason or another. We try to be involved in quite a few activities, and they get their own breakfast and they get their own lunch. And it's okay with me. We're together a lot. It's okay. I want to sit down and have dinner together, and we have family worship. This is not in my notes, but I'll tell you. We have family worship every night, and I don't always look forward to it because I don't like that role of having to hold their attention, and they're not always real thrilled to be sitting there. But I feel like that's important for us to do, and we keep working toward attitudes, and I'm committed to doing that. Question about that. Let me give you some. Pardon? Oh my goodness. And sometimes, every once in a while, I cry and leave the table, and everybody wants. They used to want to know what was the matter with me. Now they just wait till I get over it. I do. I have some concluding words. They may be longer concluding words than I plan on. But did anyone ever see the movie The Great Escape? These are going back to some of the thoughts that I had early in my years of trying to do this thing alone. The officers are in a concentration camp. They're having to get out, so they spend most of the movie trying to plan this escape. This person's going to forge IDs, and another person's going to work on digging the tunnel. Everybody has their jobs to do. But toward the end, they have to figure out if anybody's claustrophobic, because they have to count the cost before they get into the tunnel, because they know that it's going to be a disaster if they get in the tunnel and discover that they're claustrophobic. And one man opts out right away, and he says, I've got to stay. I've thought of that many times. Not that the Christian life is like a tunnel in many senses, but a commitment to Christ is a commitment, and you have to follow it to the end. And so I need to count the cost. Once I'm in the tunnel, things may go wrong when I'm in that tunnel, but it's too late. I already made my decision. That sounds a little more negative than I mean it, but the only thing to do is to press forward. Press forward to victory, press forward to freedom, press forward to the end of the tunnel when Jesus is waiting, and we want to hear him say, well done, that's what I called you to, and you did it. In a sense, we expect great things from Christian marriage, but at the same time, we shouldn't be shocked. Jesus said that in the last times, many would leave the faith. If we know our hearts, and we know that it's only the grace of God that keeps us from falling. In my most difficult days of feeling deserted by my husband and my God, two passages kept coming back to me. One of them is John 21:22, where Peter was questioning what was going to happen to John. Jesus had said something that made it sound to Peter like John might live forever. And so Peter was saying, well, what about John? And Jesus said to him, what is that to you? You follow me. And I've had to say, well, my husband was in the Lord's hands. He calls me to follow him now, and that's not, in a sense, that's not my business. The other passage was when many of Jesus' followers withdrew. Jesus asked the disciples, you aren't going away also, are you? And Peter's answer was, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. And I had moments of thinking, I just can't do this. I've had many moments of saying, I just can't do this anymore. But then the words would come to me, and to whom shall you go? I have the words of eternal life. This is my way for you. And it hasn't always been joyful. This last week has been very stressful. And there hasn't been a lot of joy in my walk. But God has called me to it, and the joy does come. And in the last analysis, I do get more joy from being focused on training my children to know him than any other joy that I could get elsewhere. That is what he has called me to. What has God done in my life since then? A At that time, I had 3 little ones and 4 school-aged children. Now I have 4 adult children, 2 married, and the little ones are now my teenagers. Another thing, I was not prepared for the shame that my kids felt when our family kind of fell apart. I knew that they would be sad. I was prepared for that. I was not afraid for the shame. I remember them saying, "We used to have a good family, and now we don't." That was very difficult for me to see that pain in them. But it gave me a heavy heart, but I well remember the Christmas that we were just having our regular Christmas celebration together several years after our family looked like that, after my husband had left. And I realized the shame was gone. God had provided for my kids. He had taken that from them, and they were able to go on in a new way. 6 years ago, God led me to begin a business offering classes to homeschoolers. That business now has 12 tutors, 100 families in it. It provides for my family some of my income. It gives me a chance to minister to others, allows me to stay home with my children, and I have a real good support system there with other homeschool moms and tutors. And I am thankful for that business every day because I have seen God's hand allowing me to minister to others while he's provided for me financially. My kids are trusting Christ, as far as I can tell. God has protected them from confusion and apostasy. Dare I ask anything more from God than that? It had been our goal as a couple to adopt some of the waiting children of the world. And during those years of struggle to just keep my head above water, I couldn't think about that. But every once in a while, I reminded the Lord, and I said, "You know how close adoption is to my heart still, Lord? Don't forget me." And 2 years ago, he gave me contact with a needy child. And he's brought him. He was much more damaged than my kids ever were. And he has brought him slowly into our family. And so we started off slowly getting to know him. He's now living in our home as a foster child, and we're headed for adoption. But that process is a provision for him, for sure. But it's been a provision for my kids as they reach out of their need for somebody else's life. And it's been an unbelievable experience for me as I realized that's what God did for me. When there was no particular reason to love me, he reached down, he set his love on me, and drew me to himself and had a relationship with me. And I'm happy to not be looking at emptiness syndrome very anytime soon. We should pray again. Thank you for your faithfulness. I thank you for your faithfulness in my over time and the things that I never thought. I pray that you would give us grace as Christian parents to hear from you, and whether it's continuing to homeschool or whether it's some other plan, that we would hear from you and that we would know your special grace in our lives. Thank you for all that you have provided. In Jesus' name, amen.